Welcome to the Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast, a podcast created to inform patients, families, and caregivers about important health transformation topics. Since the 2001 Crossing the Quality Chasm report by the Institute of Medicine, our nation's healthcare system has recognized its need to improve quality of care by way of six important aims that make healthcare safe, efficient, effective, patient-centered, timely, and equitable. But we cannot hope to cross this chasm and achieve these aims until we make fundamental changes to the whole healthcare system. All levels of this work require dramatic improvements from the patient's experience. So this podcast is dedicated to you, the voices most underutilized resource in healthcare, our patients' voices. Welcome, and we hope you enjoy the Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Natasha Washington, president and founder of ATW Health Solutions and sponsor for the Patient Partner Innovation Community. Follow the PPIC community online at atwhealth.com.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast. I'm your host, Desiree Bradley, and I am really excited to share with you our upcoming guest, Ms. Lynn Banky. Am I saying that right? Because I hadn't said your last name in a while.
You did perfectly, Desiree. Perfect.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And we're really, you know, patient safety, I'll say, has been in our eyes view for many, many, many years, but I feel like we're kind of getting a little lax. So I'm really trying to elevate the voices of patients, community partners, providers that have gone in this, I would say, patient safety journey. So whether that's a diagnostic error, whether that is a delay, or unfortunately, a medical error that resulted in an unfortunate event. So that brings me to our guest today. And so we're going to talk about diagnostic error, delay, patient safety, woman heart. So thank you so much, Lynn, for joining us. And why don't you take a moment? I know you very well, but our listeners don't. So how about you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Desiree. I'd love to do that. And you're absolutely right. Misdiagnosis and delayed diagnosis is such a difficult issue, and it's gotten worse instead of better, and as much as we hate to say it. And so I just, I'm a double boarded family and psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. I have a doctorate as a nursing practice, and my areas of specialty include complex disease management, addictions, management of depression, anxiety, integrative care. My practice has been primarily in rural areas, including Northern Michigan, as well as north of the Arctic Circle. I'm a patient-forward holistic clinician with an extensive experience in diversity, equity, and inclusion as part of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, and also part of the LGBTQIA community. I've been a faculty member at various schools of nursing, and I bring forth the challenges of the LGBTQIA community, also rural health, and my passion, and that is women's heart health. I've published on substance abuse and misuse, transitions of care, rural and indigenous vulnerable populations, the danger of underdiagnosing microvascular disease in women, the many facets of heart disease and heart failure, as well as primary care of the aging LGBTQIA adult, as I am one of them. I have several research interests, and safety and misdiagnosis is one of the most scary things I think there is. And as a faculty member, my baby, so to speak, in terms of education, is physical exam and critical thinking. Mm-hmm. And that component of the education for nurse practitioners and clinicians, I'll include the medical students as well, is the key issue of making good diagnoses, good solid diagnoses. And when I say history and physical, I mean a full history.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about women's risk factors here in a little bit, because they've changed. Mm-hmm. Women's heart health. I actually had an event in, it was in 2008. Mm-hmm. I went to a craft show and I had a funny little pain in my neck. And nurse practitioner, I mean, I've been around for a long time, and I thought, what the heck is that? You know, and I had a mm-hmm. friend who's a chiropractor take a look at it, and I do acupuncture, and I acupunctured it. I couldn't get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And so the next day I called my primary care and I said, you know, Deb, I think I need an MRI in my neck because I've got this funny little pain, kind of mm-hmm. comes and goes and I can't get rid of it. She said, well, Lynn, just to remind you, you have a fairly high stress job. You're overweight. I said, really? I haven't looked in the mirror in a while. And she said, you know, you're hypertensive. Let's get a stress test. And I flunked the stress test spectacularly.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And so the diagnostic error there was my own. I didn't even consider cardiovascular disease, because I'd forgotten that my grandmother had died at 56 of heart disease. My dad had heart disease. My grandfather, my mom's dad, my mom's mom, all my aunts and uncles, all my cousins that were my age were already dead from heart disease. But none of that entered my mind, you know, because nobody really asked me about a history. Mm-hmm. So I had cardiovascular bypass, triple, and did really well. Went to cardiac rehab. Now, what's important is the Widowmaker. I had a 95% blockage there, and 90% blockages in the other two major arteries that sit on top of the heart.
Wow.
And so, but I went to cardiac rehab, and I did my treadmill, and I did all my good stuff, and walking. And come July, uh-huh. I'd gone out, I'd done a 3-mile walk, a 10-mile bike ride, and picked supper out of the garden. It was lovely. It was a lovely summer day. Yeah. And I had kind of I didn't feel good.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel good. And I thought, well, gosh, maybe I had a bad cucumber in my salad.
Uh-huh.
And I said to my wife, you know, I don't feel right. And she said, well, let's try a nitro. And we tried a nitro, and I did 3 nitros and it didn't work. We went to the hospital and mm-hmm. I was having a heart attack.
Oh.
And so they took me to the closest tertiary hospital is 120 miles from here. So I had to go backwards, sit backwards in an ambulance all the way down there. The cardiologist that was there didn't know me from Adam, and he didn't or Adamette, and didn't look at my films at all.
Why?
My previous films. And so he went after the right coronary artery. It was blocked because of scar tissue, but there was another one. He said, oh, I have to fix that. It's 60% blocked. Never, it didn't occur to me to say, hey, that's great. It was 95.
I didn't say
that because I didn't think about it. I wasn't used to advocating for myself. I was used to having somebody else be responsible.
Yeah.
So when I came back and he went in with that, he ruptured the artery.
Whoa, you could have died.
I did. And it's not as hot down there as you think. But I did. And I woke up on the intra-aortic balloon pump, which kind of scared me because as a critical care nurse, only people who weren't going to survive, this was back in the day, only people who weren't going to survive were on the balloon pump. But I did survive. The devil threw me back, had a big conversation with the big guy, and my work wasn't done, obviously.
No.
And so it took a little while, and another trip to cardiac rehab, thank God. And I got a second t-shirt and have essentially done well since then. I've had several stents since. But the problem was I've never really had chest pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's key for women. It's okay. Key for women. Women's symptoms are significantly different than men's. And part of it is because of our anatomy. Part of it is, for the most part, women are right coronary dominant, which that means their right coronary artery is usually the biggest. And if you have problems there, you have symptoms like nausea, fatigue, sweating. Now, I had all this stuff, but I was tired because we had 12 performances in 10 days.
Yeah, you were busy.
I had a 3,000 patient practice. Come on, of course I'm busy. Of course I'm tired. Sweating, nauseated, not interested in different things, but I had that funny little pain in my neck.
Huh.
So I started with Women Heart, and you know, the second cardiologist tried to take my life, I suppose, it by accident.
Uh-huh.
But Women Heart really saved my soul, so to speak. It was having a group of women who understood, who got it, who understood the symptoms. You know, women are more likely to have missed, delayed, and dismissed diagnosis of cardiovascular disease, especially younger women experiencing a heart attack. I was also doing cardiovascular stress testing at the time, performing stress.
Yeah.
And of course, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, it always happens then, mm-hmm. had a 35-year-old gal come in for a stress test.
Uh-huh.
And everybody had said, you don't have heart disease. Why are you going in for a stress test?
Uh-huh.
I put her on the treadmill and took her off the treadmill within about 3 minutes because her EKG was so abnormal.
Wow.
So abnormal.
Huh.
And come to find out, she'd had these complications in pregnancy, and her risk profile was consistent with what we know now, not back with what we knew then. So working in a rural area, it's been a real challenge to get women diagnosed appropriately. Almost half of women are unaware that heart disease is the number one killer of women. It kills more women than all cancers combined.
No way. I did not know that.
Colon, any cancers, all cancers combined. Heart disease kills more women.
Why are we not, this is the thing, like you hear, like there's this huge campaign around, you know, check your boobs, get your mammograms, mm-hmm. do all the things. But when it relates to heart disease, and I'm going to be totally transparent and honest, I always have been told, I would say, whether that's through media and like chest pain, like if your chest hurts, you see this dramatic where I'm clenching my chest and I'm having a heart attack. But from what you're saying here, women, we have a totally different, I would say, way to kind of triggers for us to say, okay, symptoms to say, hey, I'm having a heart attack. That statistic is astounding to me.
Well, here's the other thing. High blood pressure is so undiagnosed in women. And fewer than 1 in 4 women with high blood pressure have their condition under control. Do you think that about hypertension as heart disease? No, we don't think about it.
You think high blood pressure, you automatically think stroke.
Right.
Right? But,
right.
Huh. Okay.
You know, and Black women are almost 60% more likely to have high blood pressure than white women. Mm-hmm. And women with CVD are less likely than men to receive statins for cholesterol care and are less likely to achieve ideal cholesterol recommendations. Here's the thing that breaks my heart, and that is cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of new moms and accounts for over 1/3 of maternal deaths.
Whoa.
And Black women have the highest maternal mortality rates.
Why are we not talking about this?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine having a new baby and mom dies because of what's called SCAD or spontaneous coronary artery dissection?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're pushing, that artery ruptures. And we've had heart sisters who go from the delivery room to the OR. And hopefully we get them in time.
Yeah.
There's another thing while we're talking about women, is there's a new risk profile for women. And the pregnancy-related risk factors include preeclampsia,
uh-huh,
or high blood pressure,
uh-huh,
gestational hypertension, which okay, nobody pays attention to.
Right. It's always gestational diabetes, but no, just, I have no idea if they were adequately monitoring, but I do know I had gestational diabetes.
Well, that's a failed stress test right there. Gestational diabetes, preterm delivery of a small for gestation age baby, recurrent spontaneous pregnancy loss, and other female specific risk factors are early menarche. I don't know about you, but I started my periods when I was 9 years old, and I was so mad.
Same.
See, my mother was 9. Oh, you're a woman now.
Yes.
And my whole thought was, dang it, I need to go to softball practice.
Yes. I want to go play outside. Yeah.
And then premature menopause. I mean, my last period was the day I flunked my stress test. I was 50 years old.
Really?
Hormone-based contraception. You know, the pill isn't as benign as we think it is. Polycystic ovarian syndrome, very common. Autoimmune disorders, lupus, all those types of things. Chronic inflammatory conditions that people have. Rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, lupus. I can go on and on about autoimmune issues. Depression and other mental health conditions. You know, those all raise your stress levels and raise your stress chemicals. You know, but we just carry on.
Yes.
We just motor on because we've got the kids to take care of. We've got places to go, people to see, meals to fix, all those things. And I think we've had this little discussion before.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, of course, there's the traditional risk factors, which include high blood pressure, dyslipidemia, diabetes, obesity, smoking, sedentary lifestyle. And of course, since COVID, we've all been couch potatoes.
And remote working, right?
Absolutely.
Most of us are remote working. If you're sitting at your computer, I mean, you know, I know I personally need to do a better job of, because 8 hours will pass and I'm like, oh snap, I've been sitting at this computer for 8 hours. I need to get up and start moving around and getting 15 minutes in periodically throughout the day. So that is
absolutely. Fortunately, I have bulldogs who are very gassy, and I'm going to have to get up and open the door here in a minute.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, once again, the family history, you know, my family history is horrible. And I didn't think about that. I'm Native American, high risk, high risk. And then we think about poor diet and environmental pollution. You know, the particulate matter makes it difficult. You know, we have to look at the social determinants of health. We need to really be in the community, you know, and as I've mentioned before, when I worked in the rural health centers, go to the softball games, go to the football games, go to the band concerts and the choir concerts and the community activities, and pay attention, you know. What kind of grocery stores are there? You know, do you get your food square in a box?
Yeah.
What kind of fresh vegetables? You know, all these kinds of things go into that history that we have to learn when we're in school.
Well, thinking about like, and I'm thinking, I'll go to the provider sector first. So thinking about the providers clinicians that are listening to this podcast, what advice would you give them to ensure that the patients aren't their patients? The person's coming in the doors to see them don't fall through the cracks. What advice would you give them? And I think coming from you as a provider yourself, you know, I'd love to hear what would you tell your colleagues?
I do a lot of precepting in the clinic, and I always go for the most scary thing first. Mm-hmm. If someone's coming in for chest pain or those kinds of things, what's going to kill this patient? Uh-huh. Then I do a community SDOH assessment. What are their skills? What are their, what's their reading level? Uh-huh. How can they advocate for themselves? Can they advocate for themselves? Uh-huh. What resources do they have? And I think I shared with you about having stinkweed, you know, what home remedies do people use?
Yeah.
And are they consistent with, are they appropriate?
Right. That's awesome.
Trying to help them understand that I'm listening.
Yes. That's huge. So huge.
You know, and when I recently retired clinically, one of the things that people said, oh, I'm going to miss you so. You listened to me. You heard me.
Yeah.
You knew me. And yes, I do, because I love people's stories.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so to keep people out of the cracks is put your judgment away.
Yes.
I don't care if somebody weighs 90 pounds or 550 pounds. It doesn't matter.
That's right.
I'm going to listen to them just the same.
Yes.
Ask them the same questions. I'm going to be understanding.
Uh-huh.
And yes, it takes time. And the administrators and, you know, people in positions of leadership have to understand that this kind of thing takes time.
Yes.
And then you have to have a documentation system that helps convey this kind of information. Mm-hmm. Back before the EHR, you know, back in the day, my notes, when I dictated my notes, you, Desiree, could look at my notes and see exactly what I was seeing and what I was hearing.
Uh-huh.
You can't do that with the EHR anymore. It's all pre-slugged.
Really?
You know? Yeah, and you can't get that beautiful picture that person is giving to you, because if you listen long enough, they're going to tell you.
Yes, they will.
And they will. Touch them.
Say that again.
Touch them.
Yes.
Feel them. Feel their body.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the hospital for 7 days after my bypass surgery.
Uh-huh.
And people would put their fingers around the bell of my their stethoscope and put it on my chest, never touching me.
Uh-huh.
And I finally broke. The last day, the surgeon came in. He was a substitute surgeon. He was on call. And he put his hand on my knee. And I just sobbed.
Oh.
Just sobbed. Because no one had touched me.
Uh-huh. Because you're a human. I'm a person. Absolutely. And I think, especially with COVID, right? Everybody's like, oh, don't touch. But I feel like it's that human connection that makes us get up every day to do what we want to do in terms of, you know, making sure our patients, our community is well. And yes, touching is, I think, a big thing. It's interesting you said that. I was in the hospital recently, and I went in, they were just pushing a lot of antibiotics. And so the charge nurse came in, I'd say that night, and she said, how's it going? I said, well, it's not going very well. I said, no one has done a physical assessment on me. And she was like, wait a minute, you're in here. I had a cut on the back of my toe and I couldn't see it. I didn't know it was there. right? Because we were trying to figure out, why am I septic? Why am I septic? It came from that little small scrape, right? That's the only open thing on my body. But no one had, okay, let me, Desiree is a documented diabetic who has had cellulitis before. Maybe I should check her feet. Mm-hmm. I had been there 3 days and no one had touched, like physically touched me, until this particular nurse was like, let me look at your feet. She said, you know, you have this. I said, no, I was unaware. I can't really see up under there very well. But yes, we're humans, and having those human connections, I think, makes a difference. So taking your provider hat off, putting your patient hat on, what advice would you give, I would say, to patients and community members to really empower them to make sure that they're getting the proper diagnosis? What advice would you give to them?
First of all, more than likely, you have a clue as to what's going on with you. Mm-hmm. Write your symptoms down. Take a list. Take someone to listen with you. Take a pal that can help. 4 ears are better than 2. Write down the answers. Mm-hmm. If you don't understand something, say so.
Yes.
Because if someone's talking in science language, the average Joe and Jane aren't going to understand that.
Right.
Right. Nothing has brought that home more clearly to me than being involved in biomedical research, where I have to learn attorney speak and statistical speak and all this different speak. I have no clue what they're saying to me. Not at all. But let's go back to the good old breath sounds.
Okay? Yeah.
So, you know, your provider, encourage your provider to use examples. Mm-hmm. You know, use examples that you can understand. If you don't understand, don't leave the office. It's your body.
That's right.
And when you get a prescription, unfortunately now they just go automatically to the pharmacy.
Yeah.
You don't take one of those pills until you compare the prescription to what the provider has said.
That's right.
And you ask the pharmacist. Uh-huh. And you build your advocacy army around you.
I love that term, advocacy army. Absolutely. You know, and I just think about, I mean, my family, I have family that live in deep south, rural Louisiana. And like you said, they don't understand like scientific speak. I have an aunt that, even though she has since passed, but a chemist, very smart, but still referenced diabetes as the sugar, right? So there's this whole cultural component in language, right, and dance that we play. So making sure, I love those suggestions you made. So I'm just hoping that when people listen to this episode, they're leave empowered and inspired and motivated to, you know, not only as a woman, but as a woman of color, to really take charge of my heart health and know, you know, these symptoms. I know I've learned quite a bit. I had no idea that women and men had different symptoms track. No clue. So I hope that folks have learned something today and it's brought value to them. So before I let you go, Lynn, so you can take your dogs out, parting words?
Well, our organization, Women Heart, which is the National Coalition of Women with and at Risk of Heart Disease, we have trained about 1,000 women now through the Mayo Clinic to be community educators as well as support group leaders. Nice. And our function is education, advocacy, and support for women with heart disease. Don't go it alone. You don't have to be alone. You don't have to go alone. Yes. If you look at womenheart.org, that's the beginning of our website. and that can take you deeper and find you support groups, someone to talk to, a big sister. Yeah. I had a big sister, Sally. Sally, the first time Sally and I talked, it was for about 2.5 hours, and I was sobbing most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, but having that advocacy and having that support person be with you and also help you with questions.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. We're on Facebook too.
Okay. Women
LinkedIn.
Heart. And we'll put all those links. I'm going to make sure I verify those links with you. And when we post the podcast, I'll put all those resources there so folks could just easily just click. So if you're listening and you want to learn more about Woman Heart and find those resources, they're going to be right below the podcast videos. I mean, the podcast link to listen. So you'll be able to just click and go, because I feel like you don't know what you don't know. So we will share some more.
That's fabulous. You know, and the last thing, we need to grow our own.
Mm-hmm.
Kids in our community need to go to school and become nurse practitioners, physicians, social workers, counselors. We need them in our community so they understand our community.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, Lynn, this has been always love talking with you. It was great to catch up. I know it's been quite some time.
It's been a day, girl.
It's been, but this has been wonderful. And again, be sure to be on the lookout for those resources. And as always, guys, thank you for tuning in to the Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast. I can't leave without thanking our wonderful sponsor and supporter, Dr. Natasha Washington with ATW Health Solutions. And as always, guys, be engaged.
Follow the PPIC community online at atwhealth.com.